This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Good morning and welcome. We are back here on a beautiful, just gorgeous Thursday morning. The view looks fantastic. Other than the birds are being a little weird the last couple of days. Paul, you've had this view a little longer than us.
Yeah.
Is there a time of year where the birds get weird? I just noticed the last couple of days they're getting like really close to the windows.
Yeah, it's usually during an election year.
I get it. Yeah. All right. So they're impacted like all the rest of us. You know, Nick and I were discussing right before the top of the hour break about self-silencing. This is a term that a group put together, a study, you know, says that people in general are more moderate in their private opinions than they are publicly, and sort of the group mentality and how the algorithms of social media is all that, you know, it's an interesting study to me because it helps me to understand why the polls are so wrong these days about things, right? People tell you what they think you want to hear that doesn't necessarily reflect their private views. And if you look at the social media storm, whether it's left or right, you know, your takeaway is that's what everybody is. But there's a big chunk, you know, in the middle that don't want to argue and fight with people. And so they either don't really tell you their true feelings publicly, or they tell you something different publicly than what they really believe in their heart. That resonates as true to me when talking about the American electorate today.
Yeah. I would totally agree with that. And people are kind of conditioned to say, you know, I don't want any blowback from what I say or anything. I'm going to say what I think might be appropriate when you ask.
Right. And it doesn't mean that it's groupthink mentality, because you don't really think it. You're just sort of to get along, you know, because we're all one big episode of Lord of the Flies. You know, no matter where we are in that scenario, there is that thing where you go, well, I don't want to get, you know, bunch of hateful comments, or I don't want to argue with Leroy down the street. I just want to, yeah, whatever. And then here's what I privately believe. And then that's what you take to the polling place with you.
Yeah. And I think that's true. As an editor, I hear from a lot of people, but when you consider how many subscribers and that we have, it's really a tiny minority of people. And those that are really rough in their attitudes, that's even a much, much smaller minority. So in general, I think we look at people and they want to do the decent thing. They want to sound like I'm not ignorant. You know, yeah. I am tuned in. And sometimes they will even give a moderate response to something they know absolutely nothing about.
Right.
Just to appear not to be stupid.
But here's the problem with that in application. It's one thing, you know, you choose to vote for this candidate or that candidate. A young man who I'd corresponded with when we had this whole Lincoln Park school district controversy going on, you know, he was sort of dismayed that, and he said, I mean, these people that are showing up and they're writing, you know, all these people that are, you know, it's 100 people. Let's just say it's five. Let's take it times five. How does 500 people stop a project from happening, you know, in a school district with, you know, more than 8,000 kids in a, you know, in a city with, you know, 70,000, whatever the population number is? And that is kind of always been the problem with politics, right? I mean, a tiny minority of the overall population can stop something dead in its tracks.
Right, yeah, because they're the ones that are making the noise. Everyone else is saying, I don't want to be a part of that. You know, I don't want to respond to that because I get involved in that, where you have the vast majority of people saying, what's wrong with them?
Yeah.
And I think in my way, what I resent sometimes is for the tiny minority to suddenly take over and try to override those people we've elected to office to make those decisions.
Because we live in a representative democracy. You know, people talk about this all the time. Here's your choice as citizens. You go and you vote. And there's a dismal amount of people that are actually doing that. But when you do, I'm electing Paul Osborne, or I'm electing Julie Moore Wolf, or I'm electing, you know, Rodney Davis, or who it might be, to represent me in whatever form of government they're serving. And if I don't like the decisions they make, then when they're up for reelection, I do not vote for them. That's how our system works.
Yeah, and that's how it's supposed to work. And I think at times I read statements from people who oppose something saying, the next thing we need to do, you know, it's just like, what, you taking over? Are you usurping the authority of,
right,
a city council or a school board? I mean, these are people who are duly elected to represent us. You may not agree with them all the time. You can state your opinion and say, I disagree with you. I think there's a better way. But the bottom line is they're the ones who have the vote They're the ones who will make the decision as long as they're in office.
Yeah. And it, the media plays a role in this. We have plenty of blame. Our fingerprints are on this because if you have a and there are certain types of people that I think run for office that really aren't interested in doing. They just like to be the opposition. And what they've figured out is if you've got seven council members and it's a 6-1 vote, one gets as much media attention as the other six.
Yeah.
Because they said no.
Well, usually more.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the opposition that's going to get all the attention. And I certainly learned that during the years I was mayor. You'd have one person speaking out against something, and everyone was interviewing that one person. We want to get your side of the story.
You can go. I've been to focus groups or things where they invite the public to, and there's 100 people there. Two people are mad. Those two people get all of the coverage.
Yeah.
And, it's irresponsible because 98 were in favor of it.
Well, I think you look at the definition of what's news. News is something that's out of the ordinary. Something, unfortunately, it is that one person that's in opposition to something. The other six have made the right vote, yeah, probably. But you're right. I think that one person, and I see it. I see it on television all the time, on television news. They talk to the same person all the time. Out of a council or out of a school board, because they're going to tell them the opposition story.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting that the opposition story should be buried. I'm just saying it should be proportionate. If six people felt this way and one person felt this way, that one person's the outlier.
Yeah,
and they don't get 50%. They're only one out of seven.
Well, and I think too that the responsible thing to do, and I think most members of the media realize this, is you're going to talk to the opposition. You also talk to a person that voted for it or approved it or was in favor of it. So you balance that out.
Now, and then here's the fine line difference between the one opposition vote, and you went through this your term and time, and I've seen this time and again for 26 years. There's genuine opposition, which people genuinely feel the need to oppose something. And then there's people that do it because they like the attention. And you have serial opposition. Dan Calkins was a serial oppositioner player while serving on the city council because he liked the cameras.
Yeah. And
so it's really hard for me to believe you're outraged every Monday.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to see a doctor and see what your heart rate is or something, because you're going to have a heart attack. But it's true. I think when... some people, they love the limelight.
And
I think camera.
Bill Faber plays that role. And it doesn't mean that some of his stuff isn't genuine. I'm sure it is. But when you do it over and over and over and over and over, it's harder for me to take seriously.
Well, I think certainly, during the years I was mayor, when I saw issues that were brought up and I saw, a council member talking to someone who was going to agree with him outside the mayor's window before the council meeting, I saw him talking, and then the council member would say, "Hey, is so-and-so here tonight? I'd like to get their opinion." Well, they'd just talk to him outside.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is staged. A lot of that is acting. A lot of that is prepared in order to make a point.
Manufactured outrage.
Yeah,
you see it all.
Is.
Nick, you won't believe this, but there was a time when Paul was mayor and a couple of council members, I'm going to not name any names, but we just talked about one of them, had hand signals they would use, back and forth across the day. So that's true, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I never...
Like the third grade.
I was never able to interpret exactly what all the hand signals meant. I was just making sure of the order of the fingers when they were making their signals and I was talking.
They all added up to vote no. Just had lots of signs for it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's comical now. At the time, it's like, what's going on here? And some of the others on council even mentioned it.
Yeah.
Said, are you ready for the hand show tonight?
Yeah. That's just silly. It goes back, even before Paul's time. Representative Bill Mitchell, who was a state rep for years, served on the city council. And one of the most famous conversations he ever had took place off stage when they were getting ready to walk out into the council chambers. And it was then Mayor Anderson, I believe. And I don't even remember what the project was, but Bill said to him on the way out, "I just want to tell you, Mayor, this is a great project. It's great for the city. I'm really excited that you landed this, and I'm going to vote against it."
Yeah.
And you just go, why? Because he had a political future he was thinking about, and it wasn't about serving the people. It was about, how do I climb the next rung on the ladder of my political career?
Yeah, and I think if a lot of people had experienced this firsthand and saw the politics, even at a local level, that went on, they'd probably, what? And maybe not so much today because it's so public today, where maybe it was more private.
Yeah, it still goes on today. I mean, you know, we look at, I saw former Senator Noland on Tuesday at the Do Something Great Awards, and he emceed. He's on the Community Foundation Board, and he looks great. And I'm always, Dwayne just makes me smile. I mean, I don't ever run into him and not smile and want to chat. And you know, we were having a conversation about our elected officials and our representation. And you know, it is such a far cry from the days of him to what we have now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it really has been watered down a great deal.
Well, I think since you've been on the air, and certainly since I've had the paper, you know, all those years, we've had some great leaders in the past, and those who would communicate their positions, those who stuck by their positions, those who would be willing to listen, they're willing to come in and talk to you at any time. I think Andy Menar, was very much in that way, and I think I told you, you know, a few years ago, that when he was running for that position, he was told, don't talk to buyers, don't go in. And he said, and he'd already been in. He said, I enjoyed it. And he was always available to talk.
I wish that would spread. Can we get that actually started? All the politicians, you shouldn't talk to me. My life would be way better. The quality of my life would improve a great deal.
Yeah, please.
Now the Eastern Bloc thinks they're power kings. They're kingmakers.
Yeah, and they don't talk to you either, do they?
Dan stormed out of here, I think, last. You know, Dan and I have a hate relationship over the years. Look, Dan's going to be Dan. Dan is the scorpion in the frog's fable. I mean, you know, he is just going to be Dan no matter what. And that's okay. People vote for him. You know, but what gets me about the Eastern Bloc folks is that they act like they're rainmakers, but the Democratic Party in Illinois has said to them, you're so unimportant that we're going to let you have this district. We're not going to run opposition. We're going to draw it for you because you can't get anything done.
Well,
here you go. Take it.
What's that do to those people that
live in this? Nothing.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, you know, with Mary Mill or Brad Halbrook I don't understand it. They're there to play national politics. You know, they're there to do this thing. I mean, they just love the attention. And I'm not saying this lightly. I've been doing this a long time. I've known Dan Coggins a long time. A long time. He did this every city council meeting. He's done this every, this is who he is. But that used to be kind of like out on the fringe. Now it is the mainstream of the Republican Party here locally.
Yeah.
I hear he's getting involved in city council race. You know, he really believes he's a kingmaker. And it's like, I just shake my head and go, I don't know what pill you're taking every morning to have this delusion that you are a backbencher in Springfield in a super minority with zero ability to get anything done.
Well, I think what troubles me is particularly the people in our district, in our area, and at state, and even the federal level who represent us is, you know, it's fine if you want to take a stand. It's fine if you want. But what are you doing for us? What are you bringing back to us? You know, how important is this community or this district in the eyes of those people who make those
Congresswoman
decisions?
Congresswoman Mary Miller is the only member of Congress in the entire state of Illinois that openly brags about not bringing a single earmarked dollar back to her district.
Yeah.
It's not only she didn't do anything, she brags about not doing it.
And where's that money going? It's going to other districts.
Other states, because we're still a donor state, which means, you know, for every dollar we send to the federal government, we're getting less than a dollar back.
I think this is going to continue till people just get to the point of saying, hey, we're losing out. You know, we're not getting our fair share. We're giving so much and we're not getting anything back.
But a lot of people do get something back because she will underscore and reinforce their prejudice or their feelings about this or that. I mean, you know, they'd rather her stand up and go own the libs than have a new highway.
Yeah. Yeah, that's too bad. I think
it's short-sighted for sure.
Well, and you have to be practical. You have to be practical in this. You know, I appreciate someone taking a stand if that's what they believe. I appreciate the fact they're willing to stand up and say, this is what I believe, and I'm going to stick by this. but it trickles down. You're there not to represent your stand. You're there to represent the people of your district.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing for them? Well, I'm taking this stand for them. No, you're taking a stand for yourself, and you're hoping that's enough. And I think at this point, it's surprising to me, to be honest with you, that the Trump power is still there, considering everything that's happened. And we saw that with Liz Cheney. You know, last time she ran, she got 70% of the vote.
Yeah.
She got beat badly.
By 30% this time, yeah.
And we know why.
Well, of course, because she took a stand that was an honest one and a legit one and didn't tell the people what they wanted to hear.
Yeah, and I think when we're moving along, and both of us have seen a lot of this, a lot of people come and go. And I hope the day is going to come when we stand up and look with realistic eyes as to what do I want this person in Washington to do for me and for my district. And that's not happening right now.
Well, and it's not going to happen as long as any Republican that tries to be bipartisan or work across the aisle to fund projects, which used to be applauded, would say, hey, good for you guys, putting your differences aside to do better for your district or your state or whatever it might be. Now they're just labeled as rhinos by the Republican Party. I mean, what was a virtue is now a sin.
Well, I think we saw that and continue to see that in Rodney Davis. Look at everything that he has brought back to this district. And people are saying, at least in the primary, you know, yeah, fine, thank you. But I'm going with someone who's brought nothing back, mm-hmm. you know, because I appreciate her stand. Mm-hmm. You know,
even though he voted with President Trump 92% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it said that doesn't make any difference.
Nope.
Because it's what you're doing for me today.
Yep. Or what you're saying for me today.
Yeah.
It's not doing anything. Saying.
Yeah. And I think when you look at that, it's you have to have concern about our future. You know, how far does this go before it's just the Democrats against the Republicans, not filtering down and saying
it's not even that. Here's what I truly believe and why that study we were talking about earlier, I think, is important. I don't even think it's the Democrats versus the Republicans. I think it's the fringe of the Republicans versus the fringe of the Democrats. And everybody in that middle is getting left out.
Yeah, I think to this extent that my politics, I mean, I really haven't changed. I mean, I'm pretty conservative, not far right conservative. But it's pushed me into a much more moderate position.
But if you look at Roddy Davis and Mary Miller, you know, she won the area where no one knew either of them, right? Mm-hmm. He won the area where they knew him.
Yeah.
So it wasn't enough to do all this stuff. People in Macon County, he won Macon County by 14 points.
Yeah.
So it's the people who didn't know. You go to Quincy, you go to those areas that didn't have either one. That messaging was enough to push her over the top. So I know it doesn't help him. He's still lost. But I'm heartful that people who actually knew him didn't buy into that.
Yeah. But how many people are there now, you know, statewide in that category? I mean, how many people take the time to really know to know their elected officials? And I think apparently,
well, and how many elected officials take the time to let people get to know them?
Yeah, not many anymore. You know, we found that out this time around.
Yeah, I'm hoping for like I honest to God, if we could get a complete slate of just no one showing up, I'll be happy. Personally. I'll do it for you. I'll take one for you, meaning you, the community, because you deserve to know these folks and you deserve tough questions and you deserve honest answers. But man, it is a pain because they'll come in here and they will lie through their teeth and then you're walking them out and they'll tell you how they really feel. And it is the most frustrating thing you've ever been through in your life.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a different conversation too. I know when I sat down with someone just one-on-one and, you know, like in the Tribune, in my office in the Tribune, you know, there are no recorders on, no cameras there. The conversation is very much different than if I'd been talking to them on the radio.
Yeah.
Or maybe when that microphone was off, you know, on the radio. And that says a lot to me. It's just like you're not the same person when something is recording what you're saying.
And I'm not going to listen. I will respect people's privacy. I also respect the insight. I mean, I'd rather them do it on the air. But we had one prominent Republican in these studios before the primary who did a very nice interview, enjoyed the interview. As I'm walking him out, he said, Darren Bailey is not only a phony hypocrite, he is an outrageous liar and a despicable human being. That's what he said to me on the way out the door.
So what, did he defend Darren Bailey then while he was on the air?
Of course, they all do this. It's like, it is almost impossible for me to believe that you can rationalize that to yourself.
Well, if he's saying Darren Bailey is a liar, what is that person doing if he's coming on the show?
I mean, he was running for his own office. I mean, it was, you know, but it was, they do that all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think the country is so polarized anymore that they're afraid to offend anybody. You know,
but when you get to a point as a party, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter what, where you're knowingly supporting somebody that you think is a awful human being just for the sake of the party, what does that say about what we're doing in politics today?
Well, it says that you're afraid not to endorse someone because you're going to lose those votes that you need. And I think that's the big difference today and a lot of the politicians that we see. They don't want to offend anyone.
I get it. And I go back to you can't get a little bit pregnant. And I don't know how, you know, there's a great line in The Big Chill. You remember that movie about the college chums that get back together after one of their friends killed themselves? And they talk about rationalizations. And Jeff Goldblum character says rationalizations are more important than sex. And the one guy goes, no, you're kidding me. Nothing's more important. Jeff Goldblum goes, yeah, you ever went a week without a rationalization? And that's on steroids in the political world. They just the ends justify the means.
Well, I think we see that in the advertising, tearing opponents apart instead of saying what I'm about. And maybe for every commercial that says, this is what I'm about, this is what I stand for, this is what I'll do for you, there will be 10 tearing down the opponent.
And they know when they got a bad one. I mean, I am very proud to be able to say, and I'm one of a handful of people that I have met, I didn't vote for George Ryan or Rod Blagojevich. And I had members of both sides of that knew what they had. That people knew what Blagojevich was. People knew what George Ryan was. And it was the hold your nose and vote thing. I didn't vote for either one of them.
Yeah. Well, you're a wise man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was mayor during Blago's administration, met him several times, and I was appalled at his lack of knowing what was even going on.
I remember, I think we were at the it was the opening of like the Blue Phoenix restaurant, late Paul's restaurant down on the west end. And we were doing our show live there for some reason. And he came in as a guest. And the first time I met him, I mean, whenever you met him, if there were not alarm bells going off in your head, you know, I mean, he had the snakiest just sort of persona energy. I don't even know how to describe it, right? It was just, you just, like when he left, you just go, wow, what was that?
Well, I know the Herald had a picture of him leaning over talking to me at some meeting here. And the funny part, it looked like it was something really serious. And he's saying, about this Governor Oglesby mansion, where is that indicator? He was here, like, for something really important. And just like I thought, if people only knew, he wasn't really asking about, you know, jobs or anything else, which I guess was good news for the mansion.
Yeah.
So, but what we see many times is far different than what the public sees. And maybe if the microphone could stay on, you know, which you wouldn't anyway.
I know I wouldn't. We got a break here in about 20 seconds. But I've often said if I ever write a book about my life, it'll be about what happens between the commercials, not what happens on the air.
Yeah.
Because that's oftentimes more fascinating.
Well, yeah. And I have candidates say, people say to me, you know, this is off the record.
Sorry, buddy. I got a break. Paul Osborne, City Hall Insider.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.